The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 422. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Now, I'd like to talk real quickly about last week's episode. Gerald Glassford, podcaster extraordinaire, joined me to talk about our favorite wrestling matches. And I gotta be honest, I thought that might, for lack of a better term, stir up the hornet's nest a little bit with some of the listeners out there. I thought that maybe I was going to get a bunch of comments, both through social media outlets and maybe even some emails, about how Gerald and I were wrong because we forgot about this match, we forgot about that match. And surprisingly, that didn't happen. So I just want to throw it out there. I love getting emails. I love seeing comments through the social media outlets for this podcast. Don't be shy. If you think I'm totally off my rocker for saying that, you know, Savage and Steamboat, WrestleMania 3 is the greatest match of all time, you could tell me. I don't mind. And I'm sure Gerald, I can speak for him. He wouldn't mind if you thought maybe, you know, Funk and Flair, I Quit, 1989 was a little bit overrated. You can let us know. And again, you can listen at the end of this episode. I'll run down all those different avenues where you can reach me. But you know what? Let's talk about who my guest is for this episode. And it is a gentleman by the name of Sunset Cutty. Sunset is the creator of a show called The Six Gun Theater. Now, I learned something by talking to Sunset. I did not know that there was a thing called B-Westerns. Much like there are B-movies, there are B-Westerns. And so the idea behind Six Gun Theater is that Sunset every week will show a B-Western, many of which are, you know, in the public domain. And he'll also give you a little background on the stars of the film. And I got to be honest with you, I watched the first episode and I really learned some stuff about Roy Rogers that I didn't know about. I mean, and clearly he's a pretty big name in the Western genre. So Sunset does a great job. It's on his YouTube page, which you just go and search in YouTube, Sunset Cutty. It'll come up, and that's C-U-D-D-Y. He also has the show running through public access in his home of Connecticut. And so we're going to talk about what makes a B-Western, some of his favorites, who some of his favorite stars are, how much, you know, effort and work he's got to put in for each episode. So we're going to talk all about that. But before we get into that conversation, I need to thank, once again, a great sponsor of the PVD Cast. Of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and they have tons of comics from every era. The golden, silver, bronze, and modern. They also have graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. I'm sure they have some cowboy comics there. I bet you a dollar that Jeff and the fine folks down there have a ton of cowboy comics. But nonetheless, I know what you're thinking. John, I don't live in Central Ohio. Well, you can still check out the store. You don't have to make a giant trip from wherever you are to see the store. You can go to their website, wgcomics.com, and you can check them out on their very active Facebook page at WG Comics, and you can get a flavor for the store. You can see what Jeff and those fine folks do day in and day out at the store. And you know what? I say it all the time, but I really do appreciate the patronage and the support throughout the years. World's Greatest Comics, I truly, truly appreciate it. More than words can say. And with that, I'm going to make a quick transition to let you know that I am going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with the man behind Six Gun Theater, Sunset Cuddy. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I have the privilege of sitting down with Sunset Cuddy, the man behind the Six Gun Theater. Sunset, how you doing, man?
Doing really well, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. The weather down here in Ohio is getting a little bit better as spring has sprung as of today, as it is the spring equinox. How's things up there weather-wise in Connecticut?
Doing really well, John. I can't really complain all that much. The weather's been beautiful.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into this project of yours, the Six Gun Theater. So for the listeners out there, what is Six Gun Theater?
Well, Six Gun Theater is basically a television program in which I discuss the B-Western stars of the past. And I show a variety of their films. Basically what it is, I don't know if you've ever heard of like horror hosting, you know, like horror hosts on TV, like Svengoolie, like Elvira and such. Well, this is basically the same kind of a deal here, but instead of me showing horror films, I'm showing Westerns, specifically B Westerns produced, during the 1930s, 40s and 50s. And, the impetus behind me starting Six Gun Theater was, I've always had an interest in the B-Western film genre. I've always loved B-Westerns. And I really wanted to put this passion into a project of my own. I mean, let me just, in the name of full disclosure here, say that I, in addition to Six Gun Theater, I also do write a biweekly column for a website called Cinema Crazed, where I review the old B-Westerns. As a matter of fact, the new column will hopefully be dropping tomorrow morning. And I've written about 26 of them now. And there was a brief time when I couldn't write them due to some extenuating personal circumstances. So I write the column on a biweekly basis and enjoy doing that. But I wanted to do something greater. I wanted to really put my stamp in the B-Western genre and put my stamp in the greater classic film community and fill a niche that honestly hasn't really been filled in quite a long time. And the whole impetus behind Six Gun Theater is because one of my heroes, mentors, and idols is a veteran B-Western cowboy, Sunset Carson, who produced a series of films for Republic Pictures, Yucca Pictures, and made some other sporadic film appearances thereafter. But he was a major B-Western cowboy star at Republic Studios during the 1940s B-Western boom. And in the 1980s, he actually hosted a program for South Carolina Educational Television, which ran on PBS, called Six Gun Heroes. And seeing this program, you know, actually kind of opened my eyes to, hey, this can be done again. This should be brought back. This was Sunset Carson's way of bringing back the old Westerns when they really hadn't been seen on television in quite some time. Now, at this time, there's also been a wide gap where these films haven't been seen. Probably a lot of the films that I show on my program haven't been seen since probably Sunset's original program back in the 80s. The thing is I call myself Sunset Cuddy on the program. And the reason for that is I wanted to have it be an homage to Sunset Carson and sort of tip my Stetson off to him. You know, say, hey, I want to thank you. I mean, the unfortunate thing about Sunset is he passed away on May 1st, 1990. But I still wanted to, you know, sort of pay homage to his career and his legacy of, you know, preserving this rich legacy of filmmaking by not only calling myself Sunset, but also by I have something at the beginning of my program where I have a card dedicated to Sunset Carson, you know, the original Sunset. Mm-hmm. And so in all reality, it's basically a tribute to him and his legacy, not only as a B-Western star, but also as a television host, which I think he was also quite good at. As a matter of fact, he was actually producing, just before he passed away, a program called Sunset Carson's Hollywood Nostalgia Theater, and which was basically him interviewing a lot of the stars that either he had worked with in his heyday or stars that worked on a lot of other different B-Westerns. Like, he interviews, and there's actually a YouTube channel that used to be run by the late Jerry Whittington, who worked closely with Sunset during his final years, where you could see Sunset interviewing, you know, such top B-Western stars as Yakima Knut, who was a massive, massively popular stuntman in Hollywood for years and years and years, and revolutionized fight choreography in films. And also, you know, people that he had worked with himself, like Linda Sterling, who was his female co-star in a few films and was the only woman to ever play a Zorro-like character. And also, he interviews people like Peggy Stewart, who was a screen heroine. I believe there's one where he's interviewing Eddie Dean, who was a popular country music star and also made a series of films himself. And just a lot of great interviews that he conducted with a lot of the great Western heroes of their day. Unfortunately, given that this is the year 2024 now, a lot of these people have since passed. So those interviews are quite priceless to have. It's also unfortunate because of the fact that Six Gun Theater, while I am proud of it, I do wish that I could have interviewed some of these people, you know, and sort of brought their stories to light. But hopefully by, you know, just discussing them at the top of each show, I hope I'm doing their careers justice.
You've used a term that I don't know if many of the listeners are aware of. Could you define a B-Western?
Okay. There's a specific difference between a B-Western and an A-Western. A-Westerns usually run quite a long time in length, you know, and they usually star people like Gary Cooper, Randolph Scott, or Burt Lancaster or such, and they're usually complex in plots, and they usually, there are some fights and some choreography and everything, but usually there's a bit more gloss to them, a bit more sheen to them, you know, more storytelling going on and complex storylines and such. The B-Westerns, on the other hand, there's more of an emphasis on action. They're shorter in length. Most of them clock in at about 58 minutes in total length. And they were usually made on shoestring budgets by lower budgeted film studios. As a matter of fact, back in the heyday of Hollywood, there was actually a stretch on Gower Street in California, in I believe Los Angeles, that was called Poverty Row. And Poverty mm-hmm. Row, there was another term for Poverty Row, which was Gower Gulch. And the reason why it's called Gower Gulch is because a lot of these lower budgeted Westerns were produced on these studio lots in this one section of Hollywood. And Poverty Row Studios basically functioned as the producers of B-level content. Like, back in the day, you would get two movies for the price of one, basically. You know, and you would get not only your A feature, which was, you know, your higher budgeted, higher echelon film, like Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers film is an A film because, you know, there's a lot more money spent on it. Mm-hmm. And then you would get your B film, which would basically be a film that was, and it wasn't just relegated to, you know, and I just want to be clear here, it wasn't just relegated to the Poverty Row Studios. Anyone can make a B film. Like, Fox made B films, Universal made B features, Paramount made B features. So a lot of the majors made B films as well. But really what I'm talking about are films that were made, you know, by lower budgeted studios or even some of these majors who produce these films on very small budgets. And you could tell a B Western from an A Western because B Westerns, you know, there's more of an emphasis on action. The plots are usually the same in each one. But really what it's all about are the stars in them and their charisma and how they carry the film. Sunset Carson, for example, he carries a film like Santa Fe Saddlemaids from 1945, which is a Republic production. And that film is one of my favorite B-Westerns of all time because of the fact that It has so much great action in it. As a matter of fact, within the first minute, he gets into three altercations within the first minute before there's even any plot. So it's quite an actionful piece of filmmaking. And I'm always fascinated by these because it's like just how much action and storytelling that they can get in under 58 minutes. It's really phenomenal. And, you know, there were a lot of these films produced, and so many of them at such a high volume that it's almost hard and difficult to sort of discuss them at any length because there's just so many of them. Indeed, you know, with the column that I write for Cinema Craves, Western Wednesdays, you know, I don't think I'll ever get to review every single B Western ever made. I think that's just an implausibility, but I hope to at least review a good handful of them or a good batchful of them. Because there were just so many turned out by all these Hollywood studios at the time that it's hard to keep a number on just how many were produced. Films like this were practically the bread and butter of the Gower Gulch studios, that and B-level horror films, usually with stars like Bela Lugosi, who couldn't find work in higher echelon studios. Like The Devil Bat, for example, with Bela Lugosi, is a B-level horror film because it was produced at a Poverty Row studio for not very much money. And that was actually produced for a studio called PRC, or Producers Releasing Corporation, which was one of the lower tier Poverty Row studios. But, you know, everybody says that it was one of the lower tier Poverty Row studios. It was, but they still churned out some really entertaining films. I mean, as a matter of fact, I'm going to say this. The first B-Western I ever saw was a PRC film, and it was one of the Buster Crabbe, Billy the Kid films entitled Fuzzy Settles Down, which centered around the character of Fuzzy Q Jones, played by veteran screen comedian Al St. John. And that's what got me hooked on the genre, was that film. And I think during the second season of Six Gun Theater, I think I will show that film and do a little spotlight on Al St. John. I mean, actually, I'm going to give you a little peek behind the curtain here. There's going to be two films during this initial 13 run of episodes. Where there's going to be two Al St. John films, or two films starring Al St. John. I mean, my comedy friends would probably say, oh, they're Al St. John films. You know, but, you know, there's going to be two films starring Al St. John that are going to be featured on Six Gun Theater this season. He was one of the greater Western sidekicks and doesn't get talked about nearly as often as people like Smiley Burnett or Gabby Hayes.
So a quick question here. You know, when you come to showcasing these films, are many of these films now part of the public domain that you don't have to have rights and clearances?
Yes, yes. And actually, that's a very interesting little rabbit hole for me to go down here, because I since starting this project, I have been approached by a lot of different people saying, hey, could you show The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly with Clint Eastwood, or could you show this movie? Could you show that movie? Unfortunately, I mean, here's the thing. My program is specifically dedicated to the B-Westerns of the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. I don't, you know, while I respect the Clint Eastwood films, while I respect things like spaghetti Westerns produced in Italy and later Western films, and I certainly respect the A-Westerns starring people like John Wayne and such, I think about the Westerns that I enjoy, and I think about the stars that, you know, have gotten unjustly forgotten in the annals of film history. And I think of people like Sunset Carson, like Roy Rogers, like Hoot Gibson and Ken Maynard. And even some of their films are still under copyright, but a good batchful of them are still are public domain. And the rule at my studio is that the films have to be public domain in order for me to show them. And I have to provide paperwork that clearly states that, okay, this film's copyright has not been renewed, so therefore it is safe to show on the network without any sort of issue. Well, it would be nice, you know, I mean, I'm not the guy to talk about Clint Eastwood. I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there who could discuss his career at great length. I'm not that guy. I would sit maybe and watch a retrospective on his career like that. You know, my program is specifically dedicated to the old Westerns of the silent era, the 30s, 40s, and 50s that played in the movie theaters on like Saturday mornings. And that's why I chose to air Six Gun Theater at 9 o'clock in the morning on television and on YouTube. because I want to sort of give that feel of the old Saturday matinees. You're waking up, you're going to the movie theater, and you're paying your nickel to go see Ken Maynard ride Tarzan to victory. So I want to sort of give that same feel. You know, you wake up in the morning, you get your coffee ready, you sit down in front of the TV, and you enjoy an old Roy Rogers film hosted by myself. But yes, there are films that I would love to show. Like some of Sunset Carson's better films are still under copyright, so I'm basically relegated to showing his later films produced at Yucca Pictures. But something that I would love to do is get like licensing from the different studios that control this material and get a license saying that I could show these films on television in perpetuity. Given the fact that public access is not a lucrative medium financially, nobody makes money from public access, certainly. But it would be kind of cool if I could secure licensing for a lot of the films that I would like to show, like, say, Santa Fe Saddlemates, which I mentioned earlier. I would love to show that. It's still under copyright by Republic Pictures, and Republic Pictures is now owned by Paramount. So I would have to do a Paramount in order to show that film on television. But so, yes, to answer your question, and I know that I've sort of given an elongated answer here, but the films do have to be under public domain in order for me to show them.
Well, let's talk about episode one. Episode one is Roll on Texas Moon, starring Roy Rogers, his wife, Dale Evans, Gabby Hayes, a man that you just mentioned. What's the selection process? Like, why was this film selected as the first one? Do you have a process, or is there just kind of a little bit of, I think this will make a great one?
Well, the reason why I chose to start off with Roll on Texas Moon is there are a couple of reasons. One is the name recognition, because I believe that even in the year 2024, there are still some people out there who recognize the name of Roy Rogers.
Yep.
And you know, even if you've never seen a film of his, you know, you've seen like maybe a Roy Rogers restaurant, or maybe you've seen, you know, maybe a vintage Roy Rogers toy or a comic book at a antique shop, or maybe your grandfather remembers watching Roy Rogers on television, and maybe he wants to introduce. Because see, that's the goal here with 601 Theater. Even more than my column, Western Wednesdays for Cinema Craze, my goal here is to not only bring back the Westerns that your grandparents and great-grandparents grew up watching on television and in the theaters, but it's also to introduce the newer generations to these films as well, and to these Western heroes and icons who were really the first ever screen superheroes when you think about it. I mean, long before people like Superman, Batman, and Deadpool and all these, you know, superheroes really took over, you know, the big screen, really it was guys like Ken Maynard and Hoot Gibson and Charles Sterrett, the Durango Kid, and Red Ryder and Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, and all these people who were really the superstars and the superheroes of their day. So I think it's finally time that somebody gave them their due, and I hope that I'm doing my due diligence in doing that for, you know, keeping the memory of these people alive for the new generations. I mean, as a matter of fact, there used to actually be a Roy Rogers Museum. There used to be, I believe, a Hopalong Cassidy Museum. But unfortunately, since the fans themselves are dying off these days, a lot of these organizations, like these museums and such, you know, lose funding to stay alive because their patrons are dying off, or simply can't get out to the museums anymore, which is sad to me. Mm-hmm. But I could definitely see, you know, why such things are happening. So that's why I'm hoping that with 601 Theater, I'm sort of revitalizing interest in these people.
Well, you have episode two slated to come out March 23rd. So yep. What film or what star are you going to highlight with the second episode?
For episode number two, the film that I'm going to be showing is a film called Come On Tarzan, which is a 1932 film produced by a Poverty Row studio called Worldwide Pictures, or full name being Sono Art Worldwide. And the star of that film is a man by the name of Ken Maynard. And I don't want to give too much away, you know, because, you know, I want to save, you know, a lot of the pertinent information for when that episode airs. But Ken Maynard was, he's personally one of my favorite screen cowboys. I've loved him ever since I first discovered him a few years ago. And, you know, not only does he have great charisma and he's and everything, but he's also great on a horse, you know, and he was a great trick rider. And honestly, you know, before Roy Rogers came into the picture, and I love Roy, like, don't get me wrong, I love Roy Rogers, but really, before Roy Rogers stepped into the limelight, it was guys like Ken Maynard, you know, who had the smartest horse in the movies with Tarzan. Ken Maynard's horse, Tarzan, and, you know, like, if you watch a lot of the Ken Maynard films with Tarzan, you know, it's like you could see Tarzan untying Ken from a tree, or, you know, getting Ken out of a burning building or something, you know, with Ken just saying, over here, boy. You know, it's just great. A great animal-human relationship on film that I don't think people have ever really looked at in that sort of a way. I think Ken Maynard was one of the more unheralded artists of his time, and I'm going to say this. Ken was a rather temperamental guy in real life, you know, and he bounced around from contract to contract to contract because he was temperamental. People say, oh, he had a bad attitude and he fell out of favor with a lot of people, and he did. But I believe, you know, in my estimation, that the reason he did this is because he had higher artistic aspirations than perhaps these people did. Because, you know, I truly believe that he wanted to make great films. And there's actually a book that I have just off screen here called The Happiest Trails by a gentleman by the name of John Brooker, which I highly recommend people getting, by the way. It's a great book. In it, you know, you basically have a recollection from a guy like Bob Steele, who was another great screen cowboy. And Bob Steele said of his time working with Ken Maynard on the Trailblazer series for Monogram during the 1940s that poor Ken, the thing with him is that he wanted to make every production, even if it was a lower budgeted B Western, he wanted to make every production War and Peace. yeah. And you know, I truly believe that from everything that I've read about Ken, he had higher artistic aspirations. You know, and he wanted to make sure he made the best pictures possible. You know, I think people throughout the years, as far as Ken is concerned, they've said, oh, he's just a hot-headed, miserable guy. I don't really think that's the case. I think, you know, if you really, because the Ken Maynard in that book, in John Brooker's book, is a completely different Ken Maynard than you read about, you know, online and everything. You hear, oh, he was just a miserable old drunk who, you know, just bounced from contract to contract to contract. And, you know, there's two sides to every story, I say. And, you know, I believe that, you know, he wasn't respected as an artist. And I truly believe that if he was more respected as an artist and was allowed a lot more freedom in Hollywood, then maybe he wouldn't have been so temperamental with a lot of the studios. I mean, you know, he took a lot of things to heart. Like Carl Laemmle, for example, let me tell you this story. A lot of people have told this story in the past, but they've sort of put sort of a mean-spirited spin on it. But this is the story as Ken Maynard tells it in that book. And basically it's, I guess Carl Laemmle, who was the boss at Universal, invited Ken up to his office one day and said, that last picture he made for us, Ken, was a bad one. You know, and the story is often told that Ken was like, yeah, well, I've made you 8 very bad pictures and stormed out. That's not how it happened at all. The way it really happened was Ken said, well, Mr. Laemmle, if I made you 1 bad picture, I must have made you 8 bad pictures. And they never really signed it back on afterwards. So, you know, again, there's always two sides to every story. Ken Maynard, and this is something that's really sad, you know, to think about. And I'm hoping that this is a trend in Hollywood that, you know, because I don't know why, but there was this weird, horrible trend in Hollywood in the 1970s where these wannabe, no-talent, up-and-coming, I guess, quote-unquote, stars, glommed on to older veterans of the screen and decided that, hey, I'm gonna, you know, get famous through these people, and I'm gonna steal all their money, and I'm going to basically squeeze them dry of their money and abuse them and do whatever I want with them in the name of love and happiness and everything. You know, I mean, you read that story with Aaron Fleming and Groucho Marx, how she used to beat him senselessly and inject syringes into him, and how he would cry in the corner, you know, when he was an ailing old man in his house. Well, unfortunately, the same thing happened to Ken Maynard. Ken Maynard wound up destitute in a rundown trailer in San Bernardino, California. The thing is there was a woman by the name of Marilyn Marlowe who Ken loved dearly. But she really lied to Ken and fleeced him quite a bit. And it was really sad to see how the probably one of the greatest Western stars of all time, you know, how he spent his dying days and in the twilight of his life. Interestingly enough, and I think, and I want to, you know, grow more attention to this as well, is that there was actually something rather interesting, an interesting project that Ken Maynard, you know, worked on at the end of his life, and Sunset Carson. There was a film by the name of The Marshal of Windy Hollow, which was a film that was made in 1973. And basically, it was produced by Sunset Carson and starred Sunset Carson. And it had people like, I believe, Tex Ritter had a part in the film. The old Native American actor, Iron Eyes Cody, I believe, had a part in the film. And Ken Maynard had a role in the film, I believe, as a ranger, you know? And there are surviving stills of that, you know, you see Ken Maynard sitting behind the desk and everything. The unfortunate thing about that film has never seen the light of day. And people have questioned, you know, has this film ever even been developed? What happened to the film print? There's been talks of, oh, it was seen as late as 2012. But, you know, I was talking to a Western scholar, Boyd Majors, who runs a great website called westernclippings.com. He told me that the chances of that film, you know, surfacing are now slim to none, probably more in the none category, because even if the film were to get developed at this point, it would probably be a mess. And there would probably be no way to save it. And, you know, nobody knows where this film print is or even if such a print even exists at this point. But Marshal of Windy Hollow was an interesting project because it was a reunion, if that's even a word, with all the old school cowboys of the 30s and 40s.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Sunset for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They got you covered for your comic book fandom. If you're in Central Ohio, you want to stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address, and they're pretty active on their Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. Well, let's talk about episode one, because you told me right before we started recording that you had some awesome feedback so far.
Yes.
for the project. Do you want to share that feedback?
Yes. I mean, I'm just totally blown away by the amount of love and adulation I've received as a part of, you know, that the making of that episode. I mean, a lot of my friends, you know, who are like authors, like my friend James L. Nybar, who was the guy that got me into the B-Westerns in the first place, said that he watched the first episode, and he said that I had a great presence. You know, I shared a lot of great information, and a lot of people remarked on the exceptional quality of the print of the film that I showed as well. And I want to say in the name of full transparency here that, unfortunately, not every print I'm going to show is going to be pristine like that. Because a lot of these films, like especially, you know, the more bottom you go in the spectrum of these studios, there are going to be some prints that are going to, unfortunately, not look the best. I mean, I try to make it a point to use the very best prints that I can, at least the best prints that I can get access to. But unfortunately, you're pretty much stuck with the cards that you're dealt with on that. But yeah, getting back to the feedback that I received, I mean, as just before recording, I checked the views on the YouTube version of the show that I uploaded, and it has like over 549 views, over 20 likes. I have 3 comments on it, and I am just so surprised and amazed that people are checking this show out, because, you know, I thought that this was going to be another project of mine that was going to sort of die a slow death. But no, people are actually excited about this project and are, you know, wanting to see it. And there's so much interest in it. I mean, I was at the studio today. And one of the access coordinators, a lovely gentleman by the name of Andrew Weinkoff, you know, he basically told me, you know, that my show is like a breath of fresh air in comparison to everything else that the studio is airing. I mean, everything else at the studio is either a religious show or a political talk show, you know, with no, very little variation in between. So my show, which, you know, airs on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. and Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. as a rerun, is really different from the pack in that not only am I showing a classic piece of entertainment, namely the film, but I'm also sort of educating people on the time period. I'm educating people on the stars who are in these films. And I'm hopefully providing some good historical context for these films, as well as providing some great entertainment for these people as well. You know, it is my hope that someday somebody's looking through the channels and sees this on their television and decides, you know what, I'll check this out. This looks pretty interesting. That's my goal with Sunset Cuddy's Six Gun Theater, is that I want to bring the Westerns back, real Westerns for the real fan, you know, and hopefully I'm doing that. And again, the feedback that I've been receiving is just marvelous. And I want to thank every single one of you out there who's listening to this. I want to thank every single one of you who has watched the program and has taken the time out to, you know, provide me feedback, because it's really important to me, you know, what you think and everything else. And I've even get and I've given people ways to connect with me as well. I have a Gmail address for the show, which is sunsetcuddy@gmail.com. And I also have a Facebook group, which is called Sunset Cuddy's Sharpshooters Club, which is basically a way that you can, you know, interact with other fans of the show and other fans of the old school Westerns. And you can find that at facebook.com/sunsetssharpshooters. So hopefully you go there and you can find that and join up in that group. And maybe even if you're not a fan of the Westerns, you know, maybe if you're wanting to get an interest in these films but don't know where to go to get your feet wet, join up and get a little bit of an education. I just put a post up there, I think if it wasn't today, yesterday, you know, commemorating the birthday of Smiley Burnett, who was probably best remembered as Gene Autry's sidekick in the films that he made for Republic Pictures, but was also an exceptionally gifted individual himself, great musician. He invented a musical instrument, which, you know, the name of which escapes me at the moment. But he also, you know, a lot of baby boomers would remember him as the railway engineer on the popular CBS sitcom Petticoat Junction. Yeah, very talented people who led very interesting lives. I mean, again, as I stated before with Ken Maynard, I mean, you know, a lot of, and the cool thing about a lot of these guys who were in these films were actually real cowboys, unlike a lot of the people who came later who were just actors. You know, like Ken Maynard, Hoot Gibson, you know, Sunset Carson, they all basically either grew up on farms, you know, being cowboys on farms or working in rodeos and circuses, you know, so they really lived this life. And one of the more interesting stories, and I'll share the story on the air, is that these guys were daredevils too. Hoot Gibson and Ken Maynard were great friends in real life. And they, since they both were well paid, you know, they could afford to do things like race each other in airplanes for fun. You know, you just don't hear about this anymore in Hollywood, do you? You don't hear about, say, Matthew McConaughey and Mark Wahlberg racing each other in airplanes for fun. You don't hear about that anymore, you know? But here you have Ken Maynard and Hoot Gibson in 1933 racing each other in their airplanes, which ultimately led to Hoot Gibson crashing his plane and being out of commission for a short time. Oh. But, you know, these guys were daredevils, man, and they just lived that high-powered lifestyle. It's amazing.
Well, before we start wrapping things up, just want to run down, where are all the places where you can watch Six Gun Theater?
If you are a Comcast subscriber in the state of Connecticut and you live in the towns of Middletown, Middlefield, Portland, Cromwell, and East Hampton, you can pretty much find the program on Public Access Channel 15. If you live outside of those areas, you could access the program on YouTube, because I've worked it out where when a new episode premieres on television, it also premieres on YouTube at the same exact time. So, for example, the first episode, Roll on Texas Moon, that premiered on YouTube at the same exact time as it did on television. So the show airs Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. and also it reruns on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. on Comcast Channel 15 in Middletown, Middlefield, Portland, Cromwell, and East Hampton, Connecticut, if you're a Comcast subscriber. If you're not able to catch the programs live as they air on television or on YouTube, they're archived on YouTube for later viewing also. So that's another thing. So there's, and also the studio themselves uploads the shows to their Facebook page. So there's really no shortage of ways that you could access this program. I mean, people have told me, you know, Tubi or Freevee or something like that. That's nice, but YouTube is pretty much the place to go for everything, I feel. That's where my programs get uploaded, and that's where I've gotten a lot of these great views and this great feedback. So again, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Six Gun Theater. It really means a lot. And I hope you continue to watch the show, and hopefully you're getting something out of it.
There you go. Last question, Sunset. Why do you like Westerns?
You know, that's a great question. I guess I like the B-Westerns mainly. I guess I like the aesthetic of them. You know, the Old West, how Hollywood projected the Old West to be, with the good guys in white, the villains in black. Actually, in some cases, the good guys wore black too. In the cases of Hopalong Cassidy and Lash LaRue, they both wore black, but they were on the side of good. And I guess I like them not only for the Western aesthetic, but also because I think that they're a good demonstration of the basic story construct of good and evil, and how good always triumphs over evil and all that. And I think that these films taught good values and everything, and great heroes in them, and great stars, great charisma. And I love the action in them. The action is great. I mean, I'm not an action movie fan. This is going to surprise people. I don't really care for films like Rambo or things like that. But these B-Westerns have enough action to satisfy my palate, which is great. But yeah, I love these films, and I hope I did a good enough job of explaining why. I love the horses, I love the sidekicks, I love the heroes in them, the beautiful leading ladies. A lot of these films are really fun to watch and really enjoyable, and they're not very long either. Again, they only clock in at about 60 minutes a pop, so it's not really that much of a time constraint.
All right. Well, Sunset Cuddy, it has been a pleasure to chat with you. Folks, check out Six Gun Theater. If you're in the Connecticut area, you heard where you can access it. But if you're outside that area, check them out on YouTube. Just search for Sunset Cuddy, Six Gun Theater. It'll pop up. There's a new episode coming March 23rd. Sunset, thanks, man, for chatting with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John, for having me on. I greatly appreciate it.
You got it. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Sunset Cuddy, talking about Six Gun Theater, his new project that he's awful proud of and very passionate about. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode. And let me tell you where you can get in touch with me. If you have a question or concern about this episode, or any episode for that matter, you can drop me a line through the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads accounts for the PVDcast. Just look for @PVDcast. You can also find me on X. My handle over there is @PVDMVP. And of course, you can always shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. And as I said at the beginning of the show, I enjoy the interaction, so feel free to email or drop me a line. I'd love to hear your comments. All right, and now it's that time of the show where I ask you to do me a quick favor by promoting the PVDcast, letting people know where they can hear it, and there's a bunch of different avenues for that. You can listen to every episode over at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, but it's also available through all of those podcasting outlets. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcasting app, put in the search bar PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And as you are listening through one of those podcasting apps, please make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And of course, subscribing means that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. But there's another easy way that you can hear every episode. That's every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I do a little live broadcast of the PVDcast. So just go over to the Facebook page on Wednesday nights at 8, and you can check out that broadcast as well. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2024.